check. Keep it alive through these lines I write. I keep it live cause I thrive. I might just blow your mind tonight. I'm so hyped, but it's no hype. From this height, it's direct hits on sight. I'm your type, lend me your ears to show you that there's something in me. I'm not giving up, I'm standing right here holding these days hostage, and I'll make this my year. We turning fear into love, and the love's in the air. I love doing this cause nothing compares, nothing can share that same type of feeling when you're feeling them flares. They can't catch it, it's havoc. I rip to a tear, switch the scenario. My stereos, I leave them impaired. Variables start to change, and they're all in my range. I just gotta grab it, it's all mathematics. Every step is drastic, I make it fantastic. I'm trying to take your breath away, asthmatic.
This is live through the stereo. Go and let it blow, blow through the stereo. I'ma let them know, no through the stereo. Yo, here we go, go through the stereo, stereo. This is live through the stereo. Go and let it blow, blow through the stereo. I'ma let them know, no through the stereo. Yo, here we go, go through the stereo, stereo.
Yeah, just nod your head with it. So explicit and vivid. Every image is intricate, intimate. I put my all into it. No scrimmage and no rules. I'm a pro tool. Hear my heartbeat beating to the vocals. I'm so loco, lost my mind. Oh no, it's ponderoso. Dope so, no overdose. Cause it's dope, yo. Man, this is house grown, mixed with some milestones. So I let the style flow down like the Dow Jones. Bringing it with some foul tones, letting the crowd know. We getting loud, so it's eardrum rudiments. Yeah, we bring it rude again. Move, little hooligan. Music for tuning in. Full time to the 10. I'm on my clock, like I told you. I'm doing this for dreams we pursuing.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Anti-Media Radio once again with your host, Nick Burnaby, here on UCY.TV. Thank you all for tuning in. Welcome back to the show. We haven't talked since Wednesday, but it's great to be back, and we got a lot of stuff going on. There's so much news out there. I guess we got our special guest joining us tonight, Manny Aguilar from Los Angeles. How are you doing tonight, man?
Hey, Nick, how you doing? Stuff like that. Been great being your co-host for the month of March, you know. It's really been good and stuff like that. Tomorrow, celebrating Cesar Chavez Day.
Yeah, and you know, that kind of brings us right up to this big topic, and I'm sure you're pretty familiar. We also have Jake Anderson in the house. How are you doing tonight, Jake?
Good, man.
So what's going on down there in San Quentin? Do you know anything about that, Manny?
Yeah, basically, the migrant worker, they're just fighting to get paid, you know, an equivalent of $20 a day. I mean, come on, dude. You know, people make more down here in a couple hours than they do down there the whole day. And that's really some hard work, you know. And it's picking up, you know, basically all the, you know, fruits and vegetables that not only are eaten in the other side of the border, but a lot of the stuff that comes down here. You know, if you notice, the stores lately have been carrying a lot of product from Mexico, you know. And so they just want some fair wages, and I don't blame them. That's hard work, out there in the sun all day, back breaking and stuff like that. So, you know.
Yeah, and it kind of goes, you know, this is a struggle that Cesar Chavez was very much involved with, which is the, the workers' rights, the farmers' rights. You know, these are the people, you know, in case people aren't familiar, you know, we import a lot of our food from Mexico, a lot of the farms, a lot of the fresh, you know, tomatoes, cucumbers, squash, zucchinis, a lot of the fruit and vegetables that we consume here in the U.S., strawberries. I mean, there's so many different crops that are being grown down in Mexico, and the workers are being treated like literally being treated like shit. I mean, a lot of these guys are making, like you were saying, Manny, all they want is $20 a day for, you know, a full 8 to 10 hours of hard labor. And they can't even give them that. But at the same time, we're paying outrageous prices for this produce, so somebody's making a lot of money in between. You know, and so yeah. It's up to us to, you know, what's going on down in San Quentin right now, which is down here in Baja California, several miles south of where we're located here in San Diego. But what's going on is that these workers are going on strike because they're like, you know what, we're done with this. We're not going to live like this. We're not going to live like indentured servants. We're not going to live in these camps where we don't have access to clean water, where it's rat infested. Very horrible standard of living. While at the same time, they're sending us these organic strawberries that we're paying like $7 a pound for. And it's just a symptom of this greed that's being, going on all over the place. And it's a struggle for justice in almost every industry. But, these are the guys that are really breaking their backs to get the food on our plates. So there's a big movement building up around here, especially here in the Southwest, that to support these workers and support the movement that's going on. And it's very, to me, it's very symbolic that this is happening right now in close proximity to Cesar Chavez Day, and these are the movements that Cesar Chavez stood for. If anybody, a lot of people may not know who Cesar Chavez is. Most people know him as a boxer. No, but there's a activist by the name of Cesar Chavez, and he was like the Hispanic Martin Luther King. And if you don't know, you should look him up, because he did a lot of great things and did a lot of things to help the workers, the migrant rights, the workers' rights, the farm workers' rights. And it's a movement that we got to support today, because now more than ever, if you look at what's going on in Argentina, Central America, now you got the World Health Organization coming out and talking about how Roundup is causing cancer. These guys are, not only are they faced with these unthinkable conditions, these working conditions, but they're also being poisoned by companies like Monsanto as well. And now more than ever, it's worse than ever, because now the cancer rates are higher than ever, and they're just being swept under the rug for the most part. Any country that tries to take on these big companies, they get fought tooth and nail, just like Sri Lanka. Sri Lanka tried to ban glyphosate, and Monsanto went in and tried to turn it back around on them. So this is a big movement, and Manny, I'm glad you brought it up. Is there anything else you want to bring up about what's going on down there?
Well, it's just, basically they want, respect, from both sides of the border, which I don't blame, because, they're basically saying the consumer down here and these farm people are making all this big money and they're not sharing a little bit of the wealth, and paying honest wages and stuff like that, I can relate, because back then in the old days when I was a migrant worker, I know how bad the heat is. You get dirty, and if it rains, you're muddy. And it's just amazing, And we had to fight to get water and decent, portable restrooms out there and stuff like that back in those days. And, you're probably too young to remember we were actually boycotting the grape back in those days and stuff like that. And we were actually doing boycotts back in those days against Safeway, which is basically the owners of Bonds, and now Albertsons has taken over, stuff like that. But back in those days, it was Safeway and stuff like that, and we were doing it in Calexico, by the UFW, which stands for United Farm Workers, And Arturo Rodriguez is now the president of the union, that has basically been with Caesar for a long time. And also I want to mention a strong woman in this union has been a woman by the name of Dolores Huerta and stuff like that. So all I can say is viva los, migrant workers, viva the migrant workers, viva la Unión,
Yeah, man, and there's various ways that we could support. I know here in San Diego they're holding, donation drives to go down to send food and supplies down to the workers that are on strike, because they're being, not only are they having to fight with these big, these huge food companies and the landowners, but also the cops, man. Because everywhere the cops are mostly agents of the state, the corporate state. Most governments have descended into what has now become a corporate state, no matter which country you look at. Yeah, sure, there's a few examples where there is some democracy and stuff. But Mexico is no different than the U.S. when it comes to the corporate state. And the cops down there, they're trying to break up these strikes so that they can put these guys back to work, because that's where the money's at. Yep. So not only are they struggling against the landowners and the food companies, but they're struggling against the state, the cops. So they're holding donation drives in various places here in San Diego. I know there was one that just came up in Barrio Logan. And then also, as you were mentioning, Manny, the boycotting, there's a few products that I think they're trying to boycott. I don't know exactly which ones they were. I can't remember the brand of strawberries that they're advocating for the boycott. But if you just take a few minutes to look it up and see what's coming from the San Quentin Valley in Mexico, supporting them through boycott is something simple, something easy to do. And, you know, it's just a matter of avoiding certain brands at the grocery store, to send a message that we're not going to buy stuff from people that are going to treat their workers like shit. And, you know, that there's, ever since we've been going through this industrial revolution, we've been going through this, you know, growing pains of where we go through periods of treating workers like shit. And in the U.S., I mean, there's still, even with all of our workers' rights laws and all these things, I mean, people still get treated like shit. Think about places in developing countries like, for instance, Mexico or China, you know, places where we source a lot of our products, you know, whether it's consumer goods from China or our produce from Mexico, you know, if we're going to go and buy that stuff because it's the best deal, we got to also think about, like, well, how are the people being treated that's growing this stuff? Because it's morally apprehensible to be supporting any kind of slave labor. And that's really what's going on down there. So, you know, hopefully these guys can make some headway when it comes to their boycotts and when it comes to this strike that's going on, and it's getting pretty big.
That's correct, Nick. One thing I want to say, basically no different than when what Kathy Gifford did when she found out that, you know, her company basically at the shops, you know, that were basically doing child labor in the clothes that they were making and the way they were treated and stuff like that. And so people started boycotting certain designers and stuff like that, you know, because you have to also, you know, look at not where your food comes from and how it came from, you know, and stuff like that. You also have to, you know, basically vote with your dollar and not supporting the clothes that is made by child labor and stuff like that and very unconditional, basically inhumane, you know, factories and stuff like that, et cetera. Yeah,
man, and that's a really important, you know, important point to make, because there are a lot of people out there that are very, like, very much corporate apologists and stuff, and, you know, they people like to defend Walmart and stuff. It's like, dude, well, Walmart wouldn't exist if it weren't for, first of all, the taxpayers subsidizing the workforce to give them at least livable conditions. And two, they wouldn't have such low prices if they didn't rely on slave labor and prison labor that's going on in China right now. You know, so it's and then also you got the, and then it comes back over here to the U.S. When it comes to the prison system here, and they got all that cheap labor that they're using here in the prison system. You know, so a lot of this stuff that's disguised as, you know, just business practice, it really isn't. It's just cronyism. It's all the wrong things. It's all the worst of capitalism and all the worst of socialism combined into one thing. And it's what tends to happen with every government over and over. You know, it always descends back into this oligarchy type of situation. And, you know, we got to stand up for the people with the least amount of power, the least amount of representation. And, you know, the workers that are exploited are, you know, in the world, it's a huge demographic. And there's millions of workers out there, and if not, you know, maybe a billion people that are out there that are exploited workers, that are just trying to eat, and they're getting taken advantage of. And, you know, a few people around the world are making a lot of money off of this stuff. But unfortunately, there's those millions of people out there that are suffering through it. You know, and those are the people that we need to give a voice to and that we need to have representation for. But on that note, we're going to move on to this next story. And this one's from Jake Anderson, actually. One of his recent stories about how the big pharmaceutical companies have been lining the pockets of a lot of these doctors to get them to push their prescription drugs off on a lot of unsuspecting consumers, more or less, right? And I guess tonight we can go into this a little bit, because this is a huge topic. And, you know, the whole Obamacare thing, I think it kind of ties into this in various ways, actually, because the Sunshine Act is part of the whole Affordable Care Act. And I guess we can go into that a little bit. You want to give us a little background?
Yeah. It's hugely important, because, you know, everyone, at the very least, knows someone with a prescription pill problem, and we've got an epidemic going on right now with people getting addicted to painkillers, long-term addictions to psychiatric drugs, and I have experience in all of this. I've talked to a lot of doctors, and I think anyone who has been prescribed something for the purposes of abusing it knows just how easy it is to get drugs from doctors. These are apothecaries now; they're drug dealers. They have degrees on the walls too. And I don't mean to be too disparaging to doctors. I have many close friends who are doctors. I respect the profession, but we all know this is an epidemic. And in 2013, Drug and Medical Device Corporations paid out $3.5 billion to various doctors and hospitals. That's in 2013. I don't know. Obamacare is touting huge successes in recent months and the last year. So who knows? That maybe it's up to $10 billion now. I don't know. Who knows? But
if that's how they gauge success.
But yeah, they've used the Sunshine Act provision as the Trojan horse to basically, you know, further wed Big Pharma with the backbone of, you know, healthcare. And it's a shocking number, $3.5 billion to have in a year. And then when you start to consider the reasons why drug companies have to do this, I mean, it's pretty obvious that there's a conflict of interest here. So between August 1st and December 31st of 2013, more than 1,300 hospitals, over 500,000 doctors receive financial compensation from drug and device manufacturers. So I had a friend who commented on my post on Facebook. I'm not going to name him out. He said, the vast majority of us don't get a dime from industry. Most hospitals and clinics don't even allow reps anymore. Might as well add a boo-hoo at the end of that. But here we have the numbers, and if someone wants to refute them, they can. But in 2013, 1,300 hospitals and over 500,000 doctors received financial compensation. There's a searchable database that's linked to in the article, which you can find on theantimedia.org. This is a pretty nifty little database.
That's what I really like, too, is that there's a little database there where you can just enter in the, enter in your physician and your, whoever your local provider is. And you can go in there and find out exactly how they're, if they're connected, if they're getting kickbacks of some sort from the medical industry. And, to me, this is one of the biggest topics because the medical industry it's the way it's built, it's got all these inherent conflicts of interest, right? And the whole thing is like everybody's searching supposedly for this cure for cancer. But then if you look at it from like a business aspect, you see that like businesses technically it's like, well, if cancer is one of their biggest money maker, like why from a corporate level, why would you ever want to cure cancer if cancer is one of your biggest money makers? Unless you're the guy that figures out how to make a vaccine against cancer, then all of a sudden, you're going to put it out. But the thing is that in the medical industry, it's like it's like these guys are tasked with making you better and making you not sick. But at the same time, if nobody's sick, then they're not going to make any money. And so that to me, that's why it draws such a huge red flag for me, the whole medical establishment, especially now that it's been completely corporatized and it's turned into this huge beast of what it's become, where we've got this huge medical, price inflation in the medical field and the government takeover, the mandated medical care. And Obamacare was touted as this huge universal healthcare system, when in reality it really wasn't. It was more or less a conscription-based healthcare system where it's like, okay, everybody's got to have it, and if you don't, then well, you're going to get in trouble, you're going to get a ticket. It wasn't this system that's going to, they told us that it was going to bail out the people that were the working class and it's going to help everybody, it's going to screw the insurance companies. Well, I'm here to tell you that it's not going to screw the insurance companies, because the insurance companies wrote a lot of that law, So it's like, how are you going to screw the insurance companies by forcing every person in the nation to get insurance? There were a few concessions, which was, they got rid of a lot of the pre-existing conditions, things in their contracts where they wouldn't cover people that were already sick and stuff. Yeah, they got rid of that stuff, but they made up for
it. I'm glad to hear you're at least...
part of it is good. That part, I was like, you know, that's a good part of the law. It's like, they shouldn't... insurance companies shouldn't discriminate against people for having pre-existing conditions. But the way they made up for it was saying, well, everybody that isn't sick, everybody that is healthy, well, too bad. You got to have insurance, and if you don't, you're going to pay us.
Yeah, you know, they're not discriminating against pre-existing conditions. Now they're just mandating that you not only have health care, but that you have a very easy chance of getting prescription methamphetamine if you want to.
Yeah, and that leads us into this whole other side of the topic. And I got an article in the works here, and I wrote the first part of it, and you guys probably saw the piece. It was an opinion piece that we put out last week, but it was called Drug Dealers Are Entrepreneurs and The Government is Killing Urban Innovation. But basically I was arguing the point that, you know, in many ways drug dealing is, especially when it comes to like cannabis and stuff, you know, that it's a legitimate business. But the drug war policies and stuff serve as a way to kill a lot of that innovation, and it takes a lot of the young entrepreneurs out of the urban setting and puts them into jails, and then they get institutionalized, and then, you know, the whole drug war cycle continues. But you know, the other side of this coin is that the medical establishment acts as a precursor to a lot of the addiction symptoms that we're starting to see. And when it comes to you know, giving amphetamine-based drugs to kids that they claim have ADHD. You know, there was we did a story on this a few months ago. There's 10,000 toddlers.
Right, I saw that.
10,000 toddlers in the U.S. Yeah. that are already on ADHD medicine.
2 and 3 year olds getting prescribed.
Kids that are already on amphetamine based medicine.
That's psychotic.
So, you know, what they're doing here is they're laying the foundation for a whole generation of potential drug addicts, right? And I've got a personal friend of mine that was prescribed opiate-based medicines to the point where he got hooked on it. And then when they took him off the medicine, guess what he did?
Heroin.
He turned to heroin, you know?
That's what
lot of people are doing. And so not only is this medical establishment just reaming people, making a bunch of money, but they're literally, in a way, they're laying the foundation for a whole generation of people to be hooked on this stuff.
Absolutely.
You know, and that's one of the most scary things to me. We are joined now by our co-host, DB Schwartz. How are you doing tonight, man?
I'm doing good, Nick. It's crazy you bring that up because I actually had a family member go through that whole thing. And, you know, not to get super personal, but he ended up hitting up everybody for money because he got into trouble getting addicted to heroin coming down off painkillers. And especially when they changed the prescriptions to be non-habit forming or whatever. Well, guess what? They don't work after a certain period of time.
That sucks, man. Yeah, I've had multiple friends go through that. I've gone through certain elements of it myself. It's not pretty, and it's, you know, you get a pinched nerve, and all of a sudden you get a prescription to an opiate.
Right. At least up here, they're testing Marinol, and it's going to be available in a year. And that's prescription strength, not habit forming. You know, CBD and THC. You get a little high, you get a lot of healing. We'll see how that works because they've realized that the biggest problem to have up here is like meth labs and heroin addicts because of painkillers.
Right.
So this brings us right up into our next story because I want to connect these two things together because I think it's a topic that goes, it's not talked about enough. But basically, I want to talk about the war on terror and how that's very much tied into this whole medical establishment. We all saw the numbers that came out recently. Afghanistan is now producing more opium than it's ever produced in its history. You know, in 2001, 2002, before the U.S. invaded Afghanistan, they had almost eradicated opium production. Of course, that was the Taliban. The Taliban are, you know, religious fascist or whatever. They're a horrible group. But at the same time, I mean, they were really cracking down on the heroin. They had almost eradicated it. And ever since we went in there in this war on terror, it seems like, well, the opium production has skyrocketed, you know, and can't help but wonder why. And then you know, I've got people that I know that were in the military that told me that when they were in Afghanistan, they never really destroyed any opium crops. When they found them, they kick the fools off that they found them on, they wouldn't burn them down.
With all the weapons.
They would still, you know, somebody was harvesting that stuff. And, you know, these pharmaceutical companies, no doubt, if you look at the opium production, the opium prescriptions, opiate-based prescriptions that have been coming out ever since that time, they've skyrocketed as well. And that's when you start seeing all this Oxycontin and all this stuff starting to become an epidemic. That was after 9/11, man. That was after we went in and reestablished our opium trade routes, which were in Afghanistan that were being closed down. Opium has been used in over and over. I mean, it goes back to, what was it, the Dutch East India Company. Weren't they using it? And they had a huge war in China over opium and stuff. I mean,
two wars, the opium wars. And isn't it the stuff in the bay now, Nick? Isn't that part of the whole lawsuit? It was not only the crap from Monsanto, but it was like all these prescription drugs accumulating, right?
Oh yeah, I mean that's a huge thing too. Is all the prescriptions that are going off in our plumbing system? You know, it's in our we're pissing out all these prescriptions and stuff that all these people are on, and it goes downstream. And now you got a bunch of fish in the bay that are on Prozac. You know what I mean? And they're just cruising around, all chilling.
And then you eat it.
And then you fry it up in your taco and then you eat that. So I mean it's not good for you, dude. And then the PCBs, I mean that's a horrible chemical. It doesn't break down in the environment. They banned it. I just found out today it was banned in 1978. The PCBs that, you know, San Diego launched a lawsuit against Monsanto like three, four weeks ago, because of the PCB pollution. Dude, that stuff was banned in 1978. It's still lingering in the environment, polluting the entire food pyramid. I mean, it's polluting the entire food chain.
That was the same year they banned lead-based paint, and like the EPA started getting real tough. But honestly, they put so many loopholes in there, man. It's just stupid. You can actually pay your pollution away, just keep buying carbon tax credits. It's stupid.
I mean, it's exactly that, the carbon tax stuff. The carbon tax regulations, the way as is, basically they're monopolizing regulations where the biggest carbon tax polluters can afford to pay the carbon taxes and all the other guys get crushed out of business. But the PCBs, Monsanto, all those leaked reports, those internal reports, they knew damn well 10 years before, in 1967 or 69, is when this report was leaked from. Back then, 10 years before it was banned, Monsanto knew that it was causing horrible environmental damage. And it shows in their internal reports that they were like, we know that it's causing this damage, but you know what? There's not much we can do about it. The only thing we can really do is make sure that we can continue to produce this stuff and continue to be profitable. And that's what they did. They just continued to put out a PR campaign that said, oh, no, this stuff's perfectly fine. Until finally the EPA or whatever finally was like, all right, it's caused enough damage. We're finally going to ban it. But that's what's happening now. So first you got that PCB lawsuit that's going on. The city of San Diego, along with I think it's hundreds of other municipalities, are trying to sue Monsanto over their PCB pollutions and their other pollution that they've done. But now you got this other big story for us. It was our most viral story of the week last week, which was this guy, this lobbyist for Monsanto that was on. He was trying to get interviewed on this French TV station, and he got this guy into talking about glyphosate, which is the Roundup, you know, the base ingredient for Roundup. And this guy was trying to say, Roundup's completely safe. I mean, you could drink a whole quart of it and you'll be fine. And, it doesn't cause cancer. It's not causing cancer in the farmers in Argentina. It's not causing cancer on the farmers in Latin America or Sri Lanka. But the guy, I got to applaud the journalist that was there that was interviewing this guy. Because then when the guy said that he could drink a whole quart of it and not get sick, the guy actually offered him to drink a glass of glyphosate and see how he felt afterwards. And then this is the reason it went viral is because the guy kind of freaked out and he got all mad when he offered him a glass of glyphosate, you know. But the thing is that this is very similar. Like what we're seeing now with these talking points about the glyphosate, the Roundup, and how they're trying to say, oh, it's safe and it's harmless and all this stuff. This is the same type of talk that we saw before they banned DDT, before they banned PCBs. It's like, how much cancer do we have to cause? You know, the World Health Organization just came out 2 weeks ago and they said that, you know, glyphosate is a probable cause of cancer. We think the UN Health Organization thinks that it's probably causing cancer. Well, guess what? Monsanto is the main producer of glyphosate. They use it in their Roundup. And they came out and they said, hey, we want you to retract that statement. We don't think it causes cancer. Well, dude, you've been saying that about all your other products that have been causing all these other horrible things. It's like, aren't we starting to see a pattern here? Monsanto makes a product. It kills a bunch of people, gets a bunch of people sick. They deny it for as long as possible. Finally, the product gets banned and Monsanto gets a clean slate somehow. Like, that's what I'm trying to figure out. How does this company keep getting away with DDT, with saccharin, with aspartame, with glyphosate, with PCBs? How do they keep getting away with this shit and not getting... I mean...
Because we live in a corporatocracy, and that's why.
Exactly. I mean, I would like to see the people that are running Monsanto right now be tried for crimes against humanity, man. These guys should be going to The Hague. They should be tried for crimes against humanity. They should be either rotten in jail for the rest of their life or facing execution.
Here, here.
One of the two. But instead, they're making millions and millions of dollars. And if I were to go change my car, the oil in my car right now, and I didn't have anywhere to dump it but over in the bay, and I got caught, guess where I'd go? I'd go to jail. But when these guys poison an entire ecosystem with millions of gallons of poisonous chemicals, what do they get, a $2 million fine? I mean, it's crazy. They make $200 billion, they get fined $2 million bucks. I mean, that's what's going to end up happening here in San Diego. They're going to pay a $2.5 million fine or whatever, and then we're going to forget about the fact that they poisoned every single bit of wildlife in our bay. You know,
why not spearhead some kind of citywide ban like LA was trying to do, now that you guys have proof that it's sick, making people sick?
I'm surprised you know, lawyers looking to make a name for themselves aren't you know, really spearheading. Oh, well, they'd get killed, that's why.
They'd get discredited for sure, man. I mean,
no, they'd be Silkwood style.
These
man.
Guys are dirty. Monsanto's dirty. That's how they've been able to survive all these, you know, what would typically kill a corporation. Something like DDT would kill off any regular corporation, man. Something like PCBs would kill off a corporation. You know, you get known for poisoning the entire earth with a chemical that you produce, your company normally goes under. You know, but there's something about Monsanto, man. I mean, they're being protected by somebody. They're being held up. I don't know if they're purposely poisoning people. They want people to be poisoned. I mean, I don't know how deep.
Well, who owns them?
Need to go, but it's crazy.
Who owns the most shares? What companies own Monsanto? That's the question.
Let's look that up.
I don't know, man. I don't know. But you know, the other thing about Monsanto as a company is that they basically corrupted our entire electoral system. And they've gotten really cozy in with the government. And I think that may be part of the reason why they're so protected. And I think that's one of the reasons why we need to start talking about, you know, how these corporations are able to influence and corrupt our electoral system, because we all know that they have Michael Taylor at the FDA, which is a former Monsanto attorney. They got Clarence Thomas at the Supreme Court. They've got countless members of Congress in their back pockets. And it's just a sign that it's really symbolic of our electoral system, man. It's been so corrupted by the powers that be, the money interests, the money in politics. We have a special guest in the studio with us today, Christina Tobin from Free and Equal Elections Foundation. You may know her from the United We Stand Fest, which was in LA, and a bunch of other cool things going on. We have Christina in the studio. She's visiting us from Central California area to talk about this money and politics situation and the fact that our electoral system is being hijacked by the money that... you know, the money and the powers that be. But Christina, let's start off with Monsanto. Why do you think a company like Monsanto is able to get so much influence and so much protection from, you know, just by spending a few million dollars in the government?
Well, I want to thank you, first of all, for having me. Central Coast, it seems like I'm in Colorado pretty much all the time lately, last 3 months. So it's been nice to be home and away from home down here in San Diego. And you know, regarding Monsanto, it definitely, you know, knowing someone that actually indirectly through someone who knows, does business with them, I do know, like Monsanto, there's so many layers, there's so many gates, you know, and doing direct business with them that you can call someone and there's nobody really to get to answer questions or, again, so many gates. And I feel like, you know, that the system, it goes beyond the United States of America. You know, meeting with the vice president of Costa Rica several years ago, Alfio Piva, you learn a lot about your own country and your own political system when you connect with leaders outside of the country. And Alfio Piva had told me that, you know, many years ago, several years ago, that Costa Rica, being a sovereign country since the early 60s, has, he felt, been bullied by the Obama administration. And he went into various different topics, of course, the drug war and all that. But if we want to go into Monsanto and GMOs, he talked about and context around, you know, the coffee industry in order to export coffee beans to the United States of America. They were forced, you know, the locals there to turn GMO in order to export their product to the United States of America. And so learning that the previous president was Oscar Arias, who has really in respectfully so in bed with Obama, they do a lot of things together. There's just been so many agreements that had been made prior to that administration of Alfio Piva being the vice presidential candidate with Laura Chinchilla being the first woman to be elected. So in Costa Rica, so ever woman. So, you know, I just kind of wanted to indirectly but directly answer your question. They have a lot of influence beyond the United States of America. But there are political leaders that are not happy about it. And so it's interesting. There's definitely, I feel, a lot of leaders there that there's heart there. They're binded by their parties, the party system. Costa Rica, you know, if they came out against these sort of things, they would not be aligning with the previous presidential candidate, Arias, which would split the Liberation Party, for example, in Costa Rica, which is the main party there. And then the second party to Ken, the Libertarian Party, Movimiento Libertario, would you know, naturally become the most powerful party. So so the influences of a system, of course, electoral is a given here, but throughout the world, I mean, it's just so deep. So I like to focus more on how are we going to fix it? We definitely know the problems at this point.
Exactly, you know, and that's the thing with companies like Monsanto, is that they don't go about competing in like a quote unquote free market environment. They don't even participate in a free market. They go through and they use these underhanded tactics to bully governments, bully small farmers into using their product in an almost forced kind of way. You know, it's like, hey, either you use our product or you don't do business. You know, and that's one of the huge issues with that company is that and that's why even, you know, a lot of libertarians who are typically very, you know, corporate apologetic and stuff, even people like that are very against Monsanto because of their business practices, not even including the fact that they're poisoning people on a massive scale and stuff. But what can we do here in the U.S., for instance, to start rolling back this corporate influence over the political system? And considering the fact that the corporate, you know, the reason why corporations tend to try to influence the political system is obviously to make more money for themselves, right? So what is it that we can do to start rolling this back? Because I know that's really your field of expertise, is trying to take this, you know, electoral system back from the powers that be and putting it back into the hands of the people, you know, to which it belongs. What can we start? You know, where can we start off?
Well, to really, you know, briefly address, like, you know, when you go from the prison system and, you know, being in Colorado and it just, I mean, somebody running out there, running, for example, governor as an independent, Mayor Donovan, the mayor of Glendale, you know, the day if he were to be elected as an independent, of course, he was blocked from the debates. He would pardon everybody in the prison system, you know, for, you know, marijuana, non-criminal defenses. You know, you go into the pharmaceutical industry and you think, wow, I mean, what kind of remedies could there be? You know, in the 60s, you know, you look at psychedelics. You know, I've been studying Multidisciplinary Association of Psychedelic Studies, MAPS.org, to Amber Line and her great work, and, you know, Rick Doblin, and getting to know Daniel Pinchbeck, and, you know, more in the ceremonial, shaman type. Interesting, you know, it's interesting that you can find, you know, science, pharmaceuticals seemingly may be, psychedelics, that is, seemingly may be, a remedy for a lot of pharmaceutical depression, you know, dealing with so-called ADD and so on. And so there's definitely a lot of corruption there, tying it to the electoral system, prison system, money, control, pharmaceutical, how much they donate to the candidates in office. I mean, that's pretty, pretty scary stuff. The war on terror, again, the powers to be profit off of creating needless chaos throughout the U.S. and the world. So, you know, rolling it back to the solutions, every problem we have, back to prison, pharmaceutical, war on terror. I could speak about this for such a long time, but really tying it back to the problems, every problem we have derives from having a flawed electoral system. So there is an uprising happening of whether it's leaders to poets, to musicians, to honest media, the list goes on, to Hollywood, to Oliver Stone's out there. There is an uprising. And to the Russell Brands, to the John Cusack, to the Knocko Bears, to the Michael Frantes, to the Tom Morellos, to, you know, all these people that are calling for an independent movement, an uprising outside of the two-party system. And so I've seen this for 15 years when I saw firsthand my dad, Jim Tobin, wrongfully knocked off the ballot, an accountable candidate for governor of Illinois. And I've devoted now almost half of my life at 33 years of age, really fighting for what's right, an electoral system that has a conscience, that has the most accountability. Because when we achieve that, this needless war on terror, this harm of the pharmaceuticals of good people in this room today and people that they know and I know, to the prison system of, I mean, it's going to fade away, and that's going to fade away with the party system. So I could talk a little bit more about that, of how bringing together independents is such an important faction now, since over 42% of voters, according to the polls, perceive themselves as independents, while only 25% Republican and 31 or 32% Democratic. So the uprising is huge, and now we just need to bring all these conscious, great movements, anti-media, and all these people together in a portal to sustain this.
Interestingly, Ralph Nader recently, I can't remember in what publication or when he said it, but Ralph Nader actually said that he would join hands figuratively with Ron Paul, that he saw that's how important he thinks it is for these different independent movements to be able to find some way to join together. I thought that was interesting.
Yeah, and you know, Christina were talking about this earlier. About putting aside differences, because we talked about how the Green Party and the Libertarian Party are, in many ways, starting to put aside their differences for the bigger goal, which is to get legitimate ballot access, to get, you know, outside voices into these debates and stuff. So the Green Party and the Libertarian Party, or, you know, green people that believe in green values, people that believe in libertarian values, they may fundamentally disagree on a lot of things, economically, socially, whatever. But we're starting to see that people are starting to be more willing to work together, even though they may disagree on philosophy. They do agree on principle that, hey, at the very least, our voices should be heard, right? Because right now, we saw the latest debates. Now we saw the last presidential election. It was Mitt Romney versus Barack Obama. And we see what's being, they're trying to build up right now, which is, there was just the headlines today on Google News and on Drudge Report, was that, according to the polls, it's going to be Hillary Clinton versus Jeb Bush. God, you know, and they're trying to feed us this same platform once again. John McCain, Nick, Barack Obama, Mitt Romney, Barack Obama. Go ahead.
I got breaking news. Basically, the people from San Quintin are asking people in the United States to boycott the company called Driscoll's, where you eat your strawberries, basically, you know, and stuff like that. Also, they're really mad because people in the Senate just made a comment that if people want to be paid more in San Quintin, they should go to the university. So that statement really, really killed these people, you know.
And if I may, you know, I always say it's a small world, big galaxy. Wherever we are in the world, you know, we're all one. And going back to the we're all one, Ralph Nader, Ron Paul, you may recall in the last election, came together in a press conference out in D.C. in support of opening the debates with other presidential candidates. And as far as the Libertarian and Green Party, I actually just directly spoke with the National Libertarian Party chair and national co-chair, media of the Green Party, bringing them together. That's my role here as the founder of Free and Equal Elections, a nonprofit 501c3. I've been at this for 7 years. We're here to create open and transparent elections through education, beginning in the U.S. and ideally, eventually, the world. But, you know, in any case, definitely on the greater issues, whether it's the national, the NSA, to the National Defense Authorization Act, NDAA, that is, National Defense Authorization Act, you know, to all these seemingly, all these bigger issues we can agree on. And the system has intentionally created this divide, the party system, that has thrived once again off of a flawed electoral system. Is voter fraud the issue? I would say electoral fraud is the issue. Should we have mandatory voting? Well, that's not constitutional. Freedom of speech is the choice to be able to speak, to be able to vote. We need to excite people to want to vote. We need to inspire people to want to run for office, people that are asked by their community to run rather than want to run.
Yeah, people should be compelled to run. You know, it's not that, you know, right now, I hate to say it, but most of the people that make up our government right now, they're running because they're running for somebody else. You know, they're running because they're going to help their buddies out and their buddies are going to finance their campaign. They're all going to pat each other's pockets. And after they get done with a long career in politics, they're going to go into the quote-unquote private sector, which isn't exactly private because it's down there on K Street in D.C. and they just lobby the government to make deals with their huge corporations. And it just keeps adding into this system. And, okay, I think we all know the system is pretty much jacked up, and you know, we've got to look for alternatives. Freeandequal.org is a great place to go look for these alternatives and find out about, you know, non-corporate party candidates and people that are trying to get on ballots in every state and national elections, even locally. But Christina, I wanted to get your opinion about a couple of figures that I see that could potentially be very much trying to hijack this independent streak that's been going on. You know, we got, as you mentioned, 43% of the voting electorate that self-identifies as independent. Sure, they still lean right or left. So a lot of times they'll vote Republican or Democrat or whatever. But if they actually had a viable independent or third party or fourth or fifth party candidate to vote for, you know, they would. But I think there's figures out there right now that are supposedly anti-establishment, but are actually just perpetuating this same problem with this two-party system, this monopoly, you know, duopolistic system. And those figures that I want to talk about, there's four of them that come right off the top of my head, and I just want to get your opinion on them. First of all, you have Rand Paul. Second of all, you got Bernie Sanders. Third, Ted Cruz. And fourth, Elizabeth Warren. Now, these are, you know, I picked two candidates from the Republican Party, one candidate from the Democrat, Bernie Sanders. I think the guy's more of a Democrat than anything. He claims to be a Republican, but he's very much in a way part of the, to me, he seems part of the establishment. Is he?
Sanders claims to be independent, not Republican.
Yeah, but he's running as a Democrat.
I think he's
going to
run in the presidential election. He's going to run as a
Democrat.
As a Democrat.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, what do you make of these figures? I want to get your opinion.
Well, I mean, you know, I have to be, you know, careful in the sense that Free and Equal is about uniting, and I'm about always giving the benefit of the doubt, but compromising is not an option as well. And so, you know, for me, it just, the party system doesn't work. You know, many of you may know of our open debate that we hosted in 2012, moderated by broadcast legend Larry King and myself. And we had four alternative party candidates participate, you know, Green, Libertarian, and so on, Constitution Party and Justice Party.
And I remember seeing that and seeing Jill Stein and Gary Johnson and
Roseanne
Barr. They were actually talking about real. They
she
were
ran,
about,
but she wasn't like, in that debate.
Actual ideas. They were talking about the drug war. They were talking about the war on terror. They were talking about the Patriot Act. I mean, they actually talked about the stuff that everybody wanted to hear. Instead, the stuff they showed on CNN was this: who wants to bomb Iran first? You know, draw one out of the hat. I'd bomb Iran before you'd bomb Iran. This is what we were being shown on CNN and all these stations. I mean, this is
mainstream
insanity.
Media.
It was insanity.
And
go ahead. Sorry, I didn't mean
no. That. Mainstream media is another tool. The powers to be used to control us, divide us, create needless chaos. To Hollywood, to the music industry, and so on. So, the Commission on Presidential Debates is one of, if not the most powerful tools, and I think we're going to become very aware of that soon. But I can go on that, you know, towards the end on the debates aspect, which is really what Free and Equal has evolved from debates into music festival synergy. But as far as Rand, Sanders, Cruz, and Warren, we saw what Dr. Ron Paul did. He tried to fix a party from within. However, in Florida, we saw what happened to Dr. Ron Paul. Parties cannot be fixed from within. They would rather crash the party than let someone else take over. This is very logical. And so parties, as they become larger, and the Libertarian Green Party, I find even leaders at the national level, I see them as independents. I see a huge independent vibe from both the Libertarian and Green parties, especially the state and local. That's a given for quite some time, but now even national. And, you know, I see the disconnect between the Libertarian candidate, Governor Gary Johnson, the Libertarian National Party. I find great people within both entities, but there's a huge disconnect between the parties, the candidates, as well as Dr. Jill Stein, the Green Party. And I also have seen, speaking at the National Libertarian Party in 2010, that as a party becomes larger, it inevitably becomes infiltrated, even a third party, the largest next to the D's and R's, Libertarian Party, because parties attract people who want power. And you go back to the origins of the Constitution, has no mentions of party. So when I see a candidate like Rand run Republican, Sanders, darn, I wish he stayed independent. He's running Democratic. But his views, some would think, have compromised. I'd still like to give the benefit of the doubt. Cruz and Warren, these guys are not political 101. I mean, last I checked, they're not freshmen in politics. I mean, I have a background in graphic design, business marketing. I've been, of course, with Free and Equal for 7 years. I very much know that parties just don't work. I mean, it's just, again, back to the logic. So that and everything else aside, it's a dead end. So let's focus on the solutions. Let's not be swayed by the possibility of Rand Paul coming in and saving the independent or the independent Republican movement. I mean, if you go into Kentucky and you work with the grassroots people, which I have, hundreds of them that were there for Rand Paul since day one, hardly any of them support him anymore because he left them. You can't abandon your community. And when you do that, maybe that might not be the best person. But again, I would be cool with sitting down and chatting with them. But a lot of people argue that when it comes to Dr. Ron Paul, and respectfully so, Rand Paul, if you ever hear this someday, you know, the apple did fall far from the tree. So,
you know, some people say that when the tree is on a hill, the fruit falls from it, it rolls pretty far down.
I mean, it's just, I think the system is the problem. I try not to have any anger towards those at the very top or bottom. And we just need to, yes, there are certain personality types that this current system attracts, but if they weren't there, somebody else would be there to take their place. Let's focus on fixing the system, not having ill will towards these individuals.
Well, you know, what I see it as is evolution, right? Mm-hmm. People love to talk about revolution and stuff, and I say this all the time, but I'm more of a fan of evolution than I am of revolution.
Yes, drop the R.
Revolution is a circular concept, right? And it's like you start at one point, you go all the way around, but you always end back at the same point. That revolution, by definition, is kind of a self-defeating prospect. But evolution is a little different. You continue to change, and the system. The problem is that our society has evolved our technology has evolved. And by technology, in a huge way, I'm talking about communication and ability to travel is a huge thing because it changes everybody's aspect. It changes everybody's point of view. You know, someone travels to the U.S. from India, someone from the U.S. travels to China, Japan. You get a whole new perspective on things. You can have friends. I have friends that are in Japan. I have friends that are in all these countries around the world that I can talk to you right now. I can send them a message, and my buddy in India will be back to me in 15 seconds, you know. Our technology has changed, and culturally we've evolved. We've been evolving for so long. But if you look at our governance system, the way that we've been running the way that we allow society to tell us what to do for, you know, a small part of our lives. We've been operating under the same basic system since pre-Roman days. You know, we've been operating under the same exact type of oligarchy disguised as democracy. You know, and sooner or later, we got to evolve into a situation where we actually have democracy. And then eventually, in the future, you know, it just evolves, you know, and who knows what becomes. But right now, we know damn well that, like, the current oligarchy type of corporate capitalist / socialist system that we're dealing with right now, where it's these guys have basically handpicked the worst of every economic system that's ever existed and applied it to us at the given time, you know, we know that it's not working and it's time to evolve out of it. And I think that's why what Free and Equal is so important, is because it's like this next step that we need to take, right? It's just we need to really start getting serious about representation, whether we're talking about government or whether we're just talking about representing ourselves, man. That's the biggest thing. Like, the biggest thing isn't even about the politics and stuff. It's about, like, getting that, you know, that state of mind back where it's time to just start representing ourselves, man. And if we start having enough respect to represent ourselves, well, then the fools that are leading us are going to have to respect us too, and they're not going to be able to walk all over us like they're doing right now. And I think that's a big
thing. Yeah, well, Nick, you said something about one of the biggest problems with government is we need to get damn religion out of government and stop discriminating our rainbow brothers like they are in Indiana in the name of religion. You know what I mean?
Yeah, man, you bring up a great point there, and I didn't want to forget about that. I mean, this crazy, like, it's called a religious liberty bill or whatever, and it opens up a whole can of worms over there in Indiana, and it's just like, man, are we still really actually passing laws with the intent? And that, I don't care what the law actually accomplishes. The intent of the law is clear. Like, they want people to have the right to discriminate against other people. And, like, I really don't think that needs to be, like, written down on paper, man. Like, it's like there are still people out there that are dumb enough and simple enough and brainwashed enough to where they still discriminate against people because of their race or because of their gender or because of their sexual preference or whatever. And, like, I think those people are, like, the point, like, 0.5% of humanity left in this country. And, like, sure, there's still going to be those people out there that are going to act like that. But for the most part, everybody is, like, pretty much like, okay, man, like, even if I don't agree that, even if someone doesn't agree with you, okay, like, as long as you're not, like, impeding directly on my personal situation, then I'm not going to, like, really persecute you or be against you or deny business to you or whatever, you know. And like, these guys are literally making these hyper polarizing statements and laws and all this stuff that really in the end is going to be, like, hardly consequential. I mean, how many businesses do you think exist in Indiana that are stupid enough in an economy that's like we have today? I'd understand if we're, like, living in the in, like, some kind of crazy economic bubble or something, but no, dude, the economy is still tough. Anyone that's dumb enough to turn down business from gay people, I mean, there can't be more than 10, 15 businesses in the entire state. I mean, this is total theatric. All right, that's the end of the show. Thank you, everyone, for tuning in. I'ma let them know, no, through the stereo. Yo, here we go through the stereo.